Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 26, 2017. A meeting between different factions of South Sudan's ruling party ends in Entebbe with no agreement.
And we will work out the details. The next meeting may be held again here. And thereafter, we will come up with a detailed roadmap for the implementation.
And 20 people have died from cholera in Tonj State.
The cholera outbreak in Tonj, it was started on the 18th up to today, and also the cases are still reporting, and the number of the cumulative cases is 364.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese authorities have released a journalist yesterday who has been in detention since 2014. George Livio worked for the UN-sponsored Miraya FM radio station. He was arrested in Wau by the National Security in 2014. He was detained at a known location. Several rights groups, including Amnesty International, had written a petition asking President Salva Kiir to intervene and release Livio, who spent nearly 3 years in detention without a trial. South Sudan in Focus reached Galego Livio, the father of George, by phone in Khartoum to confirm the news of his son's release.
I got the news yesterday exactly at about 5:30 in the evening.
And do you know exactly when he was released? Was he released yesterday?
He was released, according to that information, he was released yesterday, possibly about midday. I don't know the exact time, but he was released yesterday. I received the information directly from my maternal uncle, who is also responsible for him in Juba, that he was with them after the release, and I think he will be going back to get some of the things he had left behind today. So I was expecting to get a call from him, but until now he has not called me.
I can only imagine what you must be feeling right now. Could you describe the emotions that are running through you?
Oh, yeah. It's great. Myself and the mother, actually, we had a very, very exciting time last evening. And after making sure that he was really released from my uncle, so it was really very, very exciting for us. And now we are really praying to hear his voice. We want to talk to him personally, and this is why we are now expecting to get a call from him.
Do you know why he was arrested in the first place?
Well, I when he was arrested, I was in Wau by then. That was on the 22nd of August, 2014. And the reasons, I didn't get the written reason nor a confirmed reason from the government. But the general rumor was that he was said to have been collaborating with those of Riek Machar. That was how I got the information. In what way he was collaborating with them? Was it by talking or was it by writing? I didn't know until now.
Who accused him of collaborating with Riek Machar?
That was the governor of Western Barak Ezzal by then, Mr. Rizik Zakaria. The governor who was the one who lodged the information.
Have you been in contact with George since his arrest in August 2014?
Yeah, I was in contact with him about March 2015. When I brought the mother to the hospital in Cuba, I struggled and I went and saw him in the custody. He was brought to me. We chatted for about 30 minutes and he was taken back. Since then, I never saw him again. But I used to hear about him from some of his friends who were in Cuba. They were encouraging me, telling me that George was all right, and that there was a possibility of his being released. I thought he was going to be released, but this took a lot of time until now.
Why do you think it took so long to release him?
It's difficult for me to tell, of course. You know, the security people, they usually don't release their information to anybody. Why he was not released, it's difficult for me to tell.
That was Gelego Livio, father of George Livio, a South Sudanese journalist who was released yesterday after spending nearly 3 years in detention without trial. Gelego was speaking with my colleague Ayen Bior from Khartoum this past hour. The UN mission in South Sudan spokesman Daniel Dickinson says he was relieved upon hearing Livio was released, but urged authorities to free other staff members in detention.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan welcomes the release of George Livio, its national staff member who has been in detention since August 2014 without trial. The mission calls for the release of its two other national staff members who are currently also being held in detention without trial since 2014. UNMISS continues to call on the South Sudanese authorities to respect national laws and the fundamental principles of due process under international human rights law.
That was UNMISS spokesperson Daniel Dickinson. Radio Miraya is owned and operated by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. There is a cholera outbreak in Tonj State. Health officials there say at least 20 people have died from cholera in Tonj East County, and more than 350 cases of the disease have been reported this week alone. The Tonj State Health Minister says state officials are working with the UN, World Health Organization and UNICEF to control the spread of the disease. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Tonj Health Minister Lual Longar Adal says state health officials and aid agencies have established treatment centers in Makwaj, Mapara, Paweng and Paliang villages of Tonj East County to treat patients and control the cholera outbreak.
Yesterday, I received that there is new patients, new affected people, 24 people, and 6 people, they were in critical situation. But the situation is in completely now controlled.
Adal says Tonj state officials are getting help from WHO and UNICEF to combat the spread of the disease despite the limited resources.
You know, we have now a limit of the medicines, you know, and that's why we are calling the whole organizations and the National Ministry of Health so that they can help us. And up to now, we need more equipment because we, cholera. It can just even, it can be transferred from Tonj East maybe to Tonj North.
Makwai Wek, a monitoring and evaluation officer for the NGO World Vision, who works in Makwaj of Tonj East County, says health workers were receiving more cholera patients at the treatment center. He says the 20 people who died include 13 women, 6 men, and a child. Wek is urging the government and aid agencies to deploy more medical personnel in the area to stop the spread of the disease.
The cholera outbreak in Tonj East, it was starting on the 18th up to today. And also, the cases are still at 14, and the number of the cumulative cases is 364.
Wek says aid agencies providing health services have formed hygiene and sanitation teams to educate residents about how to prevent cholera. He says the rainy season makes it difficult for them to move around.
The team is fighting the field because we went to the area that I'm in now with the network, but the area the other team I went into was there, no network. And our men with the area where the network in order to communicate to the next level.
Minister Adal says if all families in their homes and people in public places, such as schools, hospitals and markets, adhere to simple hygienic practices, it will go a long way toward helping prevent the spread of the disease.
All of us have to be careful now, especially for washing hands. People should be careful with the WCs, and people, and also a lot of greetings with the hands. You know, that's my words to my people. So we have to be very, very careful.
If the situation is not contained within the next few days, Adal warns, the disease could quickly spread to many areas across the region because of the rainy season. He says that would be a disaster. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
South Sudanese leaders from the three factions of the ruling party wrapped up a 2-day meeting in Uganda today aimed at reunifying the party. SPLM Acting Secretary General Gemma Nunukumba says the meeting was successful and her party will work with other members of the factions to reunify the SPLM. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The SPLM-IO Tabandengai faction was represented by Diumathok and two others. Pagan Amum and two other men represented the former detainees, while President Salva Kiir's side was represented by Gemma Nunukumba and two party members. The SPLM-IO faction, led by former First Vice President Riek Machar, did not participate in the Entebbe meeting. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni mediated. SPLM Acting Secretary General Gemma Nunukumba says the leaders agreed to implement an earlier reunification deal signed in the Tanzanian town of Arusha.
We held a meeting yesterday in the State House, Entebbe, and agreed to proceed with the implementation of the Arusha Agreement. We also agreed to form a working group to work out the implementation roadmap of the Arusha Agreement. So these were the key resolutions of this meeting.
That agreement was not implemented in part because some SPLM members fled Juba shortly after it was signed in January 2015. Amum, Agot, and some of the members fled, saying they were fearing for their security. The agreement required the various SPLM factions to work together to end the fighting across the country. At the time in Arusha, the SPLM faction in government was led by President Salva Kiir. Riek Machar led the SPLM in opposition, and SPLM former detainees were led by Pagan Amum, who all signed the deal on behalf of their respective groups. The Arusha deal was aimed at reunifying the various factions of the SPLM following the outbreak of the conflict in late 2013. The talks were mediated by Tanzanian ruling party Chama cha Mapinduzi. Kumba says President Museveni hosted the two-day meeting at the request of President Kiir, who is keen to revamp the implementation of the Arusha Agreement. Kumba says the leaders have work ahead of them before the party can be fully reunited.
We are going to form a working group made up of the three groups, and we will work out the details. The next meeting may be held again here, and thereafter we will come up with a detailed roadmap for the implementation.
Ezekiel Lol Gatkwoth, a representative with the SPLM-IO Tabandengai faction, signed a joint communique at the end of the meeting. Gatkwoth hopes the face-to-face talks improve efforts to restore peace in South Sudan.
It is to look for a peaceful means to implement the agreement and to bring everybody on board, because you know there is an agreement which is being implemented now, but there are some disgruntled groups that are still out of the country.
It is notable that Pagan Amum, who led the former detainees at the meeting, refused to sign the joint communique. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The leader of the former detainees confirmed that he did not sign the communique at the just-completed meeting in Entebbe because other warring parties were excluded. Pagan Amum Okech says peace can only return to South Sudan if all of the different groups fighting the government are brought back to the negotiating table. Amum says stopping the war should be the first step on the road to peace.
In our view, it is very important to rescue South Sudan. It is very important to initiate a new political process that is inclusive of all the political forces in the country, whether the SPLM factions or the other new groups that have emerged, particularly after 2016, so that we bring this dangerous violence to an end and prevent the country collapsing into total chaos and disorder.
I saw signatures of the people who participated in the meeting, but your signature was missing on the document. Did you opted not to sign it?
We opted not to sign the document for more consultations, particularly on the issues of stopping war and initiating a new political, inclusive political process to end this war and prevent genocide and ethnic cleansing, which is continuing on as we speak.
And so if the former detainees did not sign the document, what does that mean? Can you still say the meeting was successful?
We had very fruitful discussions and a lot of understanding, particularly President Museveni had presented a very clear framework and ideas how to rescue the country. But unfortunately, these really were not agreed by all the groups that were there, particularly the groups in the government of South Sudan, which were basically the two groups that signed.
Given these conditions in South Sudan going on right now, there's famine, there's hunger, there's economic crisis. Now, if you are not signing to a document that might bring an end to the crisis, what does that mean to the ordinary South Sudanese? Some of them would say you are against peace.
That's precisely the point. We did not sign because the focus is about uniting the SPLM, and we are saying let us focus on ending the war and bringing peace. Because after all, we have already negotiated the reunification of the SPLM in Arusha, and we can only talk about implementation of that Arusha agreement. But what is the urgent need now is to stop the war and address all these crises, whether the displacement of our people or forcing our people to seek refuge in our neighboring countries, particularly Uganda and Sudan, but also Kenya and Ethiopia and Congo. We need this war to stop first so that our people can return, so that our people get the opportunity to rebuild their lives, their broken lives.
Stopping the war is easily said than done, because when I look at the names of the people who represented the government there, these are not military people. And the final decision stops with the commander-in-chief of the South Sudan Army, that is President Salva Kiir, who was not there at the meeting. How would you expect the delegation in Juba to agree with you on stopping the war when they are not even military people?
Well, the people who were in the meeting, the two groups coming from Juba, they represent the government, and they represent also the part of the warring party in Juba. And at the same time, the SPLMIO and others were not included in the meeting, and we are saying you include everybody so that we have an inclusive process that will stop the war and bring peace to our country and usher our country into a transition that would be stable and into handing over power to the people and all elections in a free environment.
That's Pagan Amun Okech, leader of the former SPLM political detainees. He was speaking with me today from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at how drama can bring peace in South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there anything you completed simply because you were told you couldn't?
Actually, in my life, all my plans, they are all going on well. There's nothing which has defeated me, and people can say, for you, you are just doing this one, you cannot manage. Actually, I've not gone through that experience.
Yeah, actually, there is. When I was in secondary school, people were telling me that I should not take science section. And they said that I cannot make it. So I decided to take it, and I did it. I did science section, and it was very okay.
Yes, actually, when I started my primary school, some of my friends were telling me that I will never get number one. But Dubai, because I see it was a challenge, but I try my level best. After all, I was number one.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. While the civil war and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan grow worse, much of the country's wildlife has found some safe havens, at least so far. That's according to the first aerial assessment of the conflict's effect on wildlife. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Wildlife Conservation Society issued its report based on an aerial survey done in 2015 and 16. Two Cessna aircraft, flying at 300 feet, surveyed parts of South Sudan, scene of the world's second-largest land mammal migration after the Serengeti. Dr. Paul Elkin is a senior conservationist for the WSC.
Because we've been working there for almost a decade now, 10 years, we have a sense of where the hotspots are and where the conflicts are. And of the set of 10 or more key wildlife areas, we were able to focus on at least 50% of them and get the job done.
Local communities were notified of the operation to allay any fears when the planes flew overhead.
They know us and they're used to our work there.
Among the animals surveyed were elephants, giraffes, lions, and hippos. Elkins says the survey planes flew over the central and southern parts of South Sudan on both sides of the Nile River.
Because the heavy fighting at the time and continues was mostly in the northern reaches, so we couldn't get into those zones for fear of being shot down. But we were able to safely access these other areas. So it's Boma Park, Bandingalo Park, Southern National Park, as well as some areas on the border with Kenya and Uganda and Ethiopia. So those were the key zones.
The survey found there were at least 730 elephants in the surveyed zones. Before the Civil War, in December 2013, the South Sudan Wildlife Services estimated there were about 2,300 elephants in the entire country. In the 1970s, there were nearly 80,000. Giraffes are reported in low numbers, several hundred compared to 13,000 in the early 80s. Despite that, Elkin is encouraged by what they found.
One never knows what you're going to find out there. And so these elephants and the giraffe, and obviously we have been losing some in some areas, but the fact that we have considerable numbers left show that the remoteness of the zone and, frankly, the species are able to find pockets of security despite the conflict and raging in different places.
But Elkin admits he's very concerned about wildlife in the conflict areas.
We certainly can't expect to find the encouraging results in these other more conflicted zones that we've found in the less impacted zones. And we do have reports from early 2016 from some of these northern areas of some pretty significant elephant poaching incidences of 10 and 15 animals killed at a time. Let's hope that they find the same way of surviving in the northern zones as they did in the center and south.
Besides poaching and ivory trafficking, South Sudan wildlife is under increasing threat from illegal mining and timber harvesting and charcoal production. Elkin is also concerned about the Tiang antelope and other animals that make an annual migration between the Bandingalo National Park and the Sud, the huge swamp in South Sudan. About 100,000 Tiang and more than 1 million white-eared cob and Mongolia gazelle migrate through areas where conflict is taking place.
You know, we hope that they can change their patterns if they're confronted with heavy poaching, but we're not sure that they can.
Elkin suggests safety corridors could be established for wildlife migrations, the way humanitarian corridors are for food aid. He says he hopes wildlife and natural resource conservation can be made part of South Sudan's peace process. The aerial survey was funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development and Microsoft co-founder Paul G. Allen. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Youth in South Sudan say they are learning about peaceful coexistence, making good decisions and consequences of early marriage from local radio drama series in Juba. The program called Sawa Shabab wraps up its third session this week. As we hear from Nabil Biagio in Juba, the latest season focused on teaching young South Sudanese men and women about how they can bring about peace and reconciliation.
Margaret, you're free!
Yes, the doctor said that the tests are good, and I have done a good job taking the medicines.
Oh my God, it's like...
Two South Sudanese girls, Margaret and Winnie, are having a conversation about Margaret's recent recovery from an illness shortly after she was freed from jail. In Sawa Shabab, episode 17, Margaret decides to learn how to read and write. 15-year-old fan Lado Ali says he finds the radio drama both entertaining and educational.
I learn about forgiveness, we need to reconcile about that kind of thing.
Another teenager, Christine Medina, says she learned how early enforced marriages can hurt a young woman from listening to the show.
Early marriage is not good because
If you get married earlier, it will be hard for you to provide your family.
Christine says she also learned the importance of rejecting hatred and working for unity and reconciliation in her community.
That people should stay together, stop corruption, fighting around, even killing people.
Juba teenager Sarah Kator says she too is a fan of the program, but would like the producers to introduce more topics.
I would like them to introduce subjects like how to avoid corruption, dangers of tribalism, and also they should introduce more subjects like how to teach reproductive health.
The show is locally produced by Amelna in collaboration with Peace Tech Lab and the United States Institute of Peace. Theo Dolan is Africa Director of the Peace Tech Lab based out of Nairobi. Dolan says drama is an effective vehicle to get messages out to young people in South Sudan.
Underneath that, drama is an educational curriculum. So we have goals that are built into drama to help youth understand more about gender equality and life skills like decision-making and personal responsibility, and also coexistence.
Sawa Shabab's storylines address everything from intercommunal conflict around cattle raiding to forced marriage to reconciliation and healing. Dolan says these kinds of stories resonate with a young audience, especially females.
Young women need that type of space to express themselves, and we're trying to reach out to young South Sudanese women in the country and also in the diaspora to bring them into the discussion.
While the program gets funding from Peace Tech Lab and U.S. Institute of Peace, all the technical work is performed by South Sudanese, from the script writers to the producers and actors. Producer Nicola Franco gives us a glimpse into how the program takes shape each week.
We start by gathering stories. We have scriptwriters who normally they would sit together and brainstorm and then develop their story, and we send them outside to get for us right stories, because we need the life stories. We don't create something from our own. Yes, it's drama, but we are using life stories, and then we just put some element of drama. And then after the story development, we will write the script down, which the script is ready. We have to have some reviews.
After the reviews and final approval from the producers, the scripts are given to actors who will voice them. Season 4 of Sawa Shabab is expected to start towards the end of the year. It's expected to continue to focus on the theme of peace and reconciliation. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We will now leave you with the song Take My Love, It's Free by Yvonne Chaka Chaka. We've been listening to Yvonne Chaka Chaka with the song Take My Love, It Is Free. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a good weekend, and we hope to meet you back here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.